Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. This is Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is March 13th, 2018. Well, lots going on. Trade war seems to be in the offing. As always, be part of the show. Join us. Email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. So, trade war, is it a reality or is it a fear? Well, Jordan Goodman of MoneyAnswers.com is with us now. Jordan, welcome back.
Great to be with you again, Kerry.
So, trade war, well, is that really going to happen, or is Trump truly just leveling the playing field?
I think it's going to happen. I think he's dug his heels in, and he's very unrealistic in what he's expecting from our trading partners. He exempted Canada and Mexico from the steel and aluminum tariffs as leverage to get more out of them on NAFTA. They didn't react well to that, Kerry. It's like people don't like to negotiate with a gun to their head, basically, is what it was about. So I don't think he's going to get the concessions he's looking for. And then if he takes those exemptions off, Canada is our biggest steel producer. I mean, 16% of our steel imports are from Canada. So that's on that front. And then Europe is looking at various ways to retaliate against us. They've picked out jeans and bourbon and Harley-Davidson motorcycles and cranberries and who knows what next. They're going to react to us. And China is going to react. And I think this is just a precursor to the next big one, which is intellectual property theft by China, which I agree completely. They are stealing. Okay. Movies, software, architectural plans, all kinds of things. I agree they're stealing. But when we try to put tariffs on them for that, then the trade war is going to escalate even more.
Well, actually, intellectual property theft is one area we can count upon the EU to join us. I mean, they're stealing Airbus's intellectual property as we speak. Mercedes, BMW, Porsche, Audi, Volkswagen, all of these household names are having their technology stolen by the Chinese. So it might be something that we might just get some company on and some support.
Are they going to change? I mean, here Xi Jinping has just become emperor for life. Okay, so he doesn't care what anybody thinks. He's going to go ahead and do his thing. So I think we could object. We could go to the World Trade Organization. But I don't think the Chinese are going to give in on this one. This is the way they run there. It's unfair, but that's the way they run things. So I'm not sure if getting into trade war is going to make any progress on that front.
Well, I think reports of the trade war are probably premature and greatly exaggerated. I don't think it's going to be a trade war of the type that we had during the Great Depression with the passage of the Smoot-Hawley tariff bill, where many products that the U.S. imported put tariffs on them, and thereby then there were countervailing tariffs applied against U.S. exports by Europe.
They did tariffs on 10,000 products, and then trade plummeted 60% in the 2 years after that. And then Roosevelt came in and then released a lot of the tariffs, but it was too late by then. It's not only set off the Depression, but it allowed fascism to rise, right? Because you can think of it that way. So we hope we've learned the lesson from that. But right now we're going down a road that doesn't look like either side's going to really give in. These countries don't want to look weak, Mexico and Canada and Europe. They don't want to look like they're caving in to Trump's bullying, basically, is the way they would look at it. And so it stiffens their back. And, when that happens, they're going to retaliate against us, which means prices will go up for U.S. consumers. It'll add a little bit of inflation, which could put some pressure on the Fed Reserve to raise interest rates. So there are other implications of this as well.
Well, one major thing is different between now and during the Great Depression. We were major exporter the major exporter. Our trade surplus was huge. Now yes. we've got this trade deficit that's $500-700 billion a year. So, right. so maybe the only thing we have to lose really is our deficit.
Well, I mean, there, you could say that, but deficits are not necessarily a bad thing, maybe not this big, but we are so globally interconnected. I mean, just for example, cars between U.S., Mexico, and Canada, the supply chain is just like, it's almost like it's one country when you get down to it. So you can say we have a deficit, but that's just the way the efficient use of cars is, and you want efficiency in the marketplace, and that's what you get that way.
But Mexico and Canada have become little more in many industries than transshipment points for Chinese goods to come into the U.S. without a tariff. There's 2 billion pounds of aluminum sitting in the Mexican desert now that were exported there and that were going to be stamped made in Mexico and shot into the U.S. market to further weaken our aluminum industry.
Yeah. It's dumping. I agree with you completely.
Dumping. Yeah. And then we have to look at the quality of the metal that's received. The Oakland Bay Bridge, which just got completed a couple of years ago with almost exclusively Chinese steel, is falling apart now. Was that deliberate, or did they just make crappy steel? You got to wonder, right? I mean, because it's going to cost $10 billion to replace that thing earlier than it should have been. And, you know, the inspections, well, there probably weren't any quality inspections. You know how government procurement works. So it's we are in a war.
The question is, how do we get to a more fair trading system? I mean, we brought China into the World Trade Organization, I think it was 2002. And I mean, has it been better? They've certainly gotten a lot more out of it. But now at least they're subject to the rules in theory. But it's very, very difficult to get them to change their behavior. They are producing too much aluminum, too much steel to employ their people. They're basically exporting unemployment to us. Let's think of it that way.
Yeah.
To get them to stop that is going to be very, very difficult. So we'll see. I mean, they're in a stronger position than us in many ways. They've got surpluses. They've got they own a lot of our treasury bonds. We need their help with North Korea. This is not a time to go to war with China in a certain way. And now that Xi Jinping is emperor for life, he feels emboldened to do all these things and be even more aggressive, but militarily, economically, politically. I mean, this is he's really feeling his oats these days.
Yeah, well, we're going to find out. Things seldom ever are as they appear, though. And there's probably a lot more going on here than we really know. But look, there's all these barriers against U.S. products. There's all these border adjustment taxes.
Yes.
Like Trump said, there's a 25% VAT or a 16% VAT on U.S. products going into Mexico, and then they rebate that back to their manufacturers. So it's a double whammy. And, you know,
it's unfair. I agree. We want to improve NAFTA, but I don't think we want NAFTA to fall apart, which is the possibility. I mean, all of them now have said that they'll pull out of NAFTA. Trudeau says this from Canada.
Yeah, they can. They're definitely way more dependent upon the U.S. than the U.S. is upon them.
Yes.
Mexico is the U.S.'s ninth biggest trading partner. The U.S. is Mexico's number one. Canada is U.S.'s number one. And vice versa, that probably is going to remain rather unhindered in a lot of respects. But the transshipment and the avoidance, the local content rules, those are going to get implemented whether they like it or not. And they know the U.S. has all the leverage in NAFTA. The other two,
what
are they going to do?
It's true. But you want a kind of more cooperative feeling instead of bashing each other over the head all the time with our big trading partners like this. But it may, and this is what Wall Street's really concerned about. I mean, things have been going extremely well. The economy's really got momentum. We had a fantastic unemployment report with the 313,000 new jobs. The tax cuts are now moving their way through the economy, putting more money in consumers' pockets. Companies are buying back stock. They're raising dividends. They're doing capital expenditures. All kinds of good things are going on here. And this, a trade war is Wall Street's number one concern about upsetting the apple cart here.
Yeah. And we're going to find out more about this as we go along. For sure, a full out and out trade war is not going to help anybody because there's so many aggrieved manufacturers. Well, I don't like the fact that widgets from Canada are 50% cheaper than widgets made in the US. Therefore, we need to tax them. And it might just be that they're inefficient. They're an inefficient producer. But interestingly enough, traditional Democratic allies are being peeled away from the Democrats.
I saw like the unions.
Yeah,
the unions.
Exactly. Right. Leo Girard, head president of the Brotherhood of United Steelworkers, whatever it is, something like that.
Yeah.
He's saying, hey, this is the first time any president's like gotten hip to this. You know, we owe him a debt of gratitude.
Right. And sticking up for these workers. Yeah. I mean, actually, Bush did try in 2002. Mm-hmm. He had steel tariffs, and at least the numbers I've seen, it caused 200,000 American job losses, and he pulled them back a year later because they didn't really work. So, I mean, he tried in those days. Actually, Reagan did as well. Reagan had some steel tariffs that were kind of short term. Yeah. At the time, remember, he was also trying to protect us against Japanese car imports. They had limits on Japanese
quotas. You know,
these have been tried in the past.
Hey, well, quotas actually worked, if you remember, and quotas probably be better than tariffs.
It's like, what they did, though, is it created all the Japanese incentive to build cars here. And that's when Nissan and Toyota started building their plants here, which creates American jobs. That's not going to happen. The Chinese are not going to put steel plants in the U.S. It's not going to happen.
Well, but we've seen, you know, a lot of companies. We should go back and review the beneficial effects of the tax cuts, because maybe they will act to kind of soften the blow of any trade disputes that emerge. What's your take
well,
now?
Well, that's Wall Street looks at the positive and negative. The positive is clearly the tax cuts having a very positive impact on consumers, on businesses, on government revenues. It's very, very positive all along. And then the trade war would be a potential negative. When the market's up, they look at the positives. When the market's down, they look at the negatives. But as far as the tax cuts, it's really affecting small businesses. The pass-through entity is now much more attractive for people. So that's where all the growth is happening in the labor market anyway. So they've now got a nice tax break, and that's going to help subchapter S corporations, LLCs, various kinds of pass-through entities. Big corporations are getting what I call the windfall, really, in lower taxes and therefore more cash flow. A lot of companies are using it to buy back stock or raise dividends, which is not a bad thing. I mean, it raises their stock price, it puts more money back in shareholders' pockets, and they are doing capital expenditures and raising wages and bonuses when necessary. And I've been surprised it's been more than I would have thought before as far as putting the money back into the business. So that's all very, very positive. And because the business tax cuts are permanent, it gives business executives the comfort, I guess you might say, to make long-term decisions, which in the past has been, you never know what was going to happen, and there was no sense of permanence. So that's all very, very positive for the U.S. economy. And you're seeing that in the unemployment numbers, and reinvestment back into more plants and equipment is going to mean the job numbers are going to get even bigger, I think, than 300,000.
Yeah, wasn't that remarkable? And we've seen, let's not forget the flip side of that, 40-year low of unemployment insurance claims.
Right.
Pretty amazing. So, hey, there's a lot that can go wrong. There's too much debt. The debt's not being addressed. The bubbles keep getting blown. So let's not get too
well, that's
full
right.
of ourselves.
And I think interest rates in this environment, I think interest rates are going to keep going up. I mean, the long treasury, the 10-year treasury is about 2.9 thereabouts now. I think it's going to go up to about 3.5% this year, both because of the stronger economy, but also because the government is borrowing a huge amount of money. The auctions are just gargantuan, hundreds of billions of dollars that they're doing because the government, at least in the short term, is receiving less tax revenue, and it's spending on infrastructure and military and rebuilding Puerto Rico and just all kinds of things. The spending is out of control here. So when the deficits go up, the government's going to have to finance many more debts, and therefore And the government doesn't care what it pays. It's price insensitive. It'll pay whatever the interest rate the market sets is, and that's going to be higher and higher. So this has created what I call the saver's dilemma, Kerry, which is if you have money in long-term treasuries or bonds, bond funds, you're going to keep losing more principal than you're earning in interest. If you're earning 2.9 and you're losing 10% in principal, that's not a good deal. And that's true in 401ks, that's true in mutual funds. I just think you're really in trouble if you're in long-term treasuries these days. And meanwhile, back at the bank, you're earning nothing, 0% on CDs, money market funds, savings accounts. Banks are raising what they're charging on credit cards and student loans and car loans, but they're not raising what they're paying, and therefore their bank profit margins are widening.
Right.
So that's what I call the saver's dilemma. And my solution is something I'm involved with, which is called the secured real estate fund, because there you get an 8% yield, but it doesn't fluctuate in value. The net asset value stays at $10 a share no matter what. They've had a long-term track record of doing this. There's a website for that, securedrealestatefunds.com. And a lot of your listeners have gotten into that in the past and been very happy to get 8%. You can do it inside an IRA. You can do it outside an IRA. Minimum investment, $5,000. Minimum holding period, 1 year. And after that, you can get your money whenever you like. So in an environment where you're going to lose money in long bonds and get nothing at the bank, I'd rather get 8% with no market volatility. Yeah. And that's, again, if that helps any of your folks, securedrealestatefunds.com.
SecuredRealEstateFunds.com sounds good. Hey, so now Trump's talking about phase two of the tax cuts, which is something that we predicted here months ago. In fact, I wrote an article about it, not to toot my own horn too loudly, but back in December 27th of last year, spreading the wealth Trump style, get ready for the next round of tax cuts. Now he's started to talk about it. I'm sure it'll take place after the election. But
yeah, and he has a Republican House and Senate to be able to do something like that, because the Democrats would not agree to any of it whatsoever. They didn't like the first one, never mind the second version.
Yeah.
But it's clearly been working. It's clearly been stimulating private investment, and people are taking home more money in their paychecks. I mean, some of the inequities in the first tax bill, for example, in the past two entities we talked about, the effective tax rate for small businesses is about 29%, whereas big businesses is about 21%. So that's something they could even that out and give even a bigger boost to medium and small sized businesses that are pass-through entities.
Hey, and so, and then we might see an upping. I think we'll see a doubling, maybe to 20,000, but probably at least to 15,000 of the state and local tax exemption or deduction. So when you add that's
hurt a lot of the high tax states and real estate in those states, in New York and Connecticut, New Jersey and California, the places that have high property taxes and high income taxes, being limited to 10,000 is a real pain for a lot of people. It's still hitting the upper income people. I think it's only about 3% of the population has property taxes over 10,000. But for those people, it's hurting them, and it's hurting real estate values already.
Yeah, especially in your neck of the woods. For
correct.
Sure.
In New York. Indeed.
There's plenty of people paying over $10,000 in real estate taxes in Florida, in every state. So I would predict that that is going to be modified, probably knock down individual rates another point or two. And what I'm really predicting here, and it goes along with the trade war aspect. If you remember, in the 60s, early 70s, we had this thing called the DISCO, Domestic International Sales Corporation, where if you exported overseas, you paid no taxes or had an 85% exemption. I don't remember exactly the details, but it made it very profitable to export overseas. We are going to see that come back. I'm willing to bet you dollars to donuts on that one, Jordan.
Yeah.
Because it just, hey, the way the government looks at it is we aren't going to make any money on taxes for stuff that doesn't get sold overseas anyway. So let's
encourage them to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's encourage them to do it and not collect any taxes on it for a period of time. And it'll further improve the country's trade outlook. And that might be what rescues us from a trade war. I think that DISCO, then they called it something else. It still exists, but it's really limited.
No, that would help. And the other thing that's helping is the repatriation. We're seeing a huge amount of money coming back from overseas. Huge. Hundreds of billions, actually.
Right. Which
I think it's going to be maybe $2 trillion or something like that. And these companies are going to have to find out what to do with it domestically. Like Apple said, they're going to build another headquarters and another 20,000 people and do some manufacturing here. And Cisco and Merck and Microsoft and all these companies are bringing this money back. They've got to find a way to invest it in the U.S. That's all positive as well.
And it makes total sense. We knew this was going to happen. You and I talked about it numerous times. So we're in the best possible market. Can the market go up from here, Jordan, or can it stay up?
I think it can go up higher if we don't have a trade war. if we have an outright trade war where there's retaliation and trade goes down, I think that's a real negative for the markets, I must say. And I hope we avoid it. The way things are going right now, it doesn't look like we're going to avoid it. I hope it doesn't happen. But that's, to me, the biggest downside risk right now. But if you take that out of the equation, I think the market could go much higher. I think the Dow could go over 31,000 this year, something like that.
Martin Armstrong is saying 52K, Dow over 50K, rather. Dow 50,000 in several years. But that's
not this year.
No, not this year. But that's because of other things, not just the actual performance of the economy. It's got to do with government debt and all sorts of other bad things, stuff happening in Europe, et cetera, et cetera. But, hey, look, when you look at where we're at and where we were, certainly we're in a better situation.
Employment
numbers,
yes,
and just optimism. I mean,
right.
Even
business
in New York.
Optimism, consumer optimism, investor optimism, and right. That has a big role to play. I mean, mm-hmm. Psychology can be positive or negative. I mean, think of 2008. Here we are in 2018, 10 years ago. Think of what we were like. I mean, here we are in March. Mm-hmm. Bear Stearns had just gone under, okay? And what was coming forward? Lehman Brothers, AIG, General Motors, Chrysler, Merrill Lynch, all the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, all these places were about to go under. And it just caused a huge amount of fear and caused a tremendous contraction in people's spending and investing decisions. What a difference between 10 years ago and today, where things look really very positive, except for the trade war possibility.
Yeah, what a difference a year makes, eh? Well,
I want to make an offer to your listeners, by the way,
sure.
Kerry. I've got a landing page that might be helpful to them. It's moneyanswersman.com and then /financial survival. And I'm offering them some free things. I did an interview with John Rubino, who I know you know well.
Good friend of the show.
Very, very incisive on all these issues in my Money Answer show. I've given you a little bit more about the Secured Real Estate Fund. I get a newsletter, a free newsletter, all kinds of good things. So have them go to moneyanswersman.com/financial survival, and I made it especially for your followers.
Hey, and we will have that in the show notes, and just go over, and it says go to Jordan's site, and it will lead you right to that page. And Jordan, it's always great talking to you. Let's see what's going to happen next here. It's interesting times, uncharted territory.
And I'm always, by the way, glad to take emails from your listeners at moneyanswers.com. I get them all the time.
Hey, and if you want, be part of the show, join the dialogue, just email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. The Twitter feed's @KerryLutz and the Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Jordan, we'll catch up with you next month. Be well.
Okay. Thanks so much, Kerry. Appreciate it.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.